When I ordained in 2011, it was, to me, I did something that my mother couldn't do and my grandmother couldn't do.
It's sweet. I have to give him a hug. And they probably would have done, isn't it? Actually, they probably would have done.
Yeah.
This is Ajahn Brahm here speaking to you from Perth in Western Australia. In a few months' time, in October, I will be travelling to London to support a very worthwhile project called the Anukampa Project.
There's nothing wrong with being ugly, fat. I celebrate my talent.
I know that there are some things which a monk can teach people and they get inspired. There's other things which you need a Theravada Buddhist nun to teach, which I cannot do, which no other monk could do. So I'm very supportive of Bhikkhuni Chandra Visuddhi giving so much work and so much effort to try and start something for Theravada Buddhist women in UK.
Just opened this monastery a week today. I think I've always liked being on the top of a hill, and this is on a hill over Oxford, the kind of places where sages live. Ajahn Brahm always jokes that you don't find enlightened people in the swamp. So this is not a swamp, it's a hilltop. So I'm Venerable Chanda, and I ordained in Myanmar in 2006 and spent the first 4 years of my monastic life training there before coming across Ajahn Brahm around 2010 and on a leap of faith going out to access his teachings and eventually taking higher ordination with him in Perth. And that's where I met Venerable Upeka also.
I'm Venerable Upeka, and I'm Venerable Chanda's friend, who's come from Perth to help her at this time of her project. So I'm not sure what's going to happen, but here I am.
And at the time I ordained in Perth, I'd already been in robes for about 8 years before the full Bhikkhuni ordination. And I was really aware of the difficulties for women to actually find a place to ordain and the challenges in finding a place that's suitable for their long-term growth. And the fact that, you know, just like in any livelihood, we need change. We need to go to different places, train under different teachers, develop certain qualities in us that maybe we can't develop in one place alone. And because of my great faith in my teacher, Ajahn Brahm, I was willing to serve in whatever way he wished me to. So when he asked me in about 2015, as a joke, actually, if I'd consider coming to England and starting something here, I was like, oh yeah, that's kind of funny and sure. And I went back to him a month later and said, you know, was that just a joke or were you serious? And he sort of said, yeah, just go and see what happens. Very relaxed. So I left Perth for my annual trip. And while I was over here, there was some interest in seeing the Bhikkhuni Sangha revive here because there aren't any opportunities, there aren't any bhikkhunis in this country, let alone monasteries where they can live. And so I said to Ajahn, well, there's some interest, but of course I'd need you to be involved, you know, you'd have to come over and teach. And since you advise me on so many things anyway, could you be the advisor to this project? And I expected him to say, I'm far too busy. But he said, sure, no problem. And then I realized, gosh, I have my teacher coming to England. I have to do something fast.
You never know, it might make a nice logo. It'll be very minimalist.
So I figured out that we'd probably need a name and probably need a bank account and a website. And I had no idea how to do the second two. The name, okay. And come up with something. And I came up with the name Anukampa, which means compassion. And in particular, a kind of empathetic compassion that's actually moved to give and that's moved to act in this world and to try and alleviate the suffering of others. So that the name was easy and the rest was a make it up as you go. So I had to kind of put myself out there on social media, which I'd never done before. And just try to rally around some interest and some support and of course start teaching the Dhamma as well. And for the first 4 years of this, it was basically me living from house to house with any layperson that was kind enough to offer me a room and a place to put my laptop. Actually, it was just a tablet at that time. And I spent hours and hours organizing these tours. So that was the first 4 years. And I'd spend every rains retreat in Perth to meditate at Jhana Grove with Ajahn Brahm and keep my practice strong. So every time that I came back, it was really, in a sense, a big adventure and also a big risk. But slowly some momentum started to build, and about 4 or 5 years ago, we rented our first place in Oxford. This was in the BSWA newsletter. When we got our first property, this is the first property.
The one that we are going
later. Yes, the one that we're going later on. Because I hadn't lived in England for most of my adult life. I'd lived in Asia, mostly India and Burma, and then Australia. So I really had no idea where to start. But Oxford is also quite close to London. It's easy to access. It's somewhere that I knew two or three people. And it's quite multicultural, like there's a lot of overseas students, it's got a kind of fairly young and dynamic vibe, and it's quite a beautiful city.
So we used to do our retreats in here, and we had Ajahn Brahm here for a couple of one-week retreats that we took together online, and I think there's still a very peaceful energy here, the way you can transform a house into a vihara. Colour helps too.
This is my, what became my room. Yeah, so you can see the same colour. So, Ajahn Brahm sat in the cupboard. I asked him to do it. I said, look, Ajahn, what? I know he likes cupboards. I said, you can meditate in there.
It's like his cave, right?
So he said, really? I said, yeah. Are you going to try? He said, okay. And then I asked him the next day. He said, yeah, 20 minutes. He sat in there.
Oh my God.
Sideways, of course. So this is what I miss the most, my study. And this was my white cupboard with tons of plants. And this is what I want in the new place. Just a room, any room, little room, fine. That I could be on my own, close the door and get on with my work. Mm-hmm. But you just have to make decisions for the bigger picture, even when it's uncomfortable. Oh, well, the heating's on now. Lovely. But still, renting a little house in the city was a big difference from living as a forest bhikkhuni. And the aim was always to have a place big enough that we could actually take in trainees. So for several years, I've been wondering how this can happen, because even though people are incredibly generous worldwide, the house prices in England are shooting up, the economy is really struggling. And some people said to me, well, you know, the funds coming in are coming in more slowly than prices are increasing. You'll never manage. And of course, there have been difficulties in other ways, finding the right people, having trustees on board who then turn out to have maybe not the same intentions as the spiritual leaders of the project, and many, many challenges we've had to overcome. But then finally last year, when Ajahn Brahm was over in England, I kind of hit a point where I was like, how do we go on from here? And I could see my mind getting despondent, and I thought, right, I'm just going to check online and see if there's any property available. You never know. By now I've checked through thousands, right? Thousands and thousands of places across the whole country, various different towns, villages, every possible floor plan. I know them all. And suddenly I saw this place and I was like, oh, okay. It's in a fantastic area, just 5 miles from Oxford, but it's a rural area. And this place had the perfect floor plan, at least in terms of the kind of main rooms. And what I always look for is a beautiful room for meditation, which is where we're sitting now. And you can see there's a gorgeous cherry blossom outside, and it's really spacious. Also big areas for guests to receive guests at lunch, and a nice airy kitchen as well with some accommodation, about 5 rooms upstairs. And the potential to expand. As well as that, we have some outbuildings already, which we want to make into cooties in the long run, so that the monastics have suitable seclusion.
Let's go through here, because it's really nice. Now, this is going to be the nuns' area through here. Now, for every nun who wants a nice monastery, they look for the shed. So even though people might think the house is impressive, this is what interested me. A shed with a bit of electricity. However, it's very damp and not quite habitable.
So, I don't know what we'd have to do, but it'd be great to turn this into a cootie. Be careful of the cobwebs and the damp. But it's a good location because there's already electricity here, but we'd obviously have to rebuild it completely.
But there's another lovely little cootie, potential cootie here, which was used as a tennis changing room. Wow. But to us, that looks like a cootie. Apparently, they were here before the house, and there's a few of them on Boars Hill where they are academics used to come up from Oxford to read their books. And we could make an area there for the Sangha, or we could make the nuns' area bigger so there's more seclusion.
Because for our practice, it's really important that we have a sense of solitude. And this is what enables us to really go deeper into the Dhamma and help other people to practice more deeply as well. But also a beautiful place to attract people who want a bit of a refuge from the busyness of the world. So, when I mentioned this place to Ajahn Brahm, it seemed a little bit spontaneous. There were only another 5 or 6 days left of his tour. But I said to him, look, Ajahn, I'm just going to phone the agent. So I phoned the agent immediately and I said, have you got a slot on Wednesday morning? I remember the day because it was the 1 hour that Ajahn Brahm had free, that we both had free in the tour. And amazingly, they had a place for us to come and visit. And I think for me, it was a combination of inspiration, but also just sitting down in the main room and feeling this sense of peace come over me. And it just seemed as though there was a special, quiet atmosphere here.
Thinking thus, I will allay hunger without overeating.
So at that point, we still didn't have the money. We're actually almost $1 million short. We basically tried to discuss it with the people at the weekend retreat. He was still in England for a weekend retreat, and we said, we need these loans in order to make this happen. And the feedback from the international community was just incredible.
So because yesterday we told you that we went to see it on Wednesday, a beautiful property on a hill with a forested area and just the right amount of seclusion while still being accessible. So I loved it. Ajahn Brahm,
I loved it too.
And, but they already had one offer, which was kind of competitive to us because they would still have to sell their property first. But now they had a cash buyer. So it's like really intense. So alongside being peaceful here, I've been on the email and talking to the agent.
And the feedback from the international community was just incredible. People were so enthusiastic, and we got offered so many different loans, all of which we couldn't take up, but we got a loan in the end that was sufficient to bridge the gap. And we made an offer a few weeks later, which eventually was accepted.
I think that this aspiration has been in the hearts of women for 1,000 years at least, and they just could never do it. My great-grandmother apparently was a very pious woman, and so was my grandmother, and so was my mother, and they never had the opportunity to. So it just, I don't know why I have. I feel I possibly must have been waiting for lifetimes myself. So when I ordained, I thought, my goodness, I've been given this gift. And I mean, it's just natural to want to make it available for others. So. Venerable Chanda, I met when she visited Perth in, 2012. And I just thought, don't I know you? And she thought, don't I know you? But we had never met before. So we can only assume it's from another life. So why am I in England? I have no connection to this country. I grew up in New Zealand and in Singapore, and I'm a Sri Lankan originally, but you just have to share what you have been so freely offered. And Venerable Chanda is a good friend, and how can you not help a friend when they are in need? So here I am. So maybe we made this aspiration in another life. Who knows? But
it's probably quite likely.
Probably quite likely, yeah. It was right after COVID when a lot of changes happened for this project, because Venerable Chanda had spent quite a few years in sort of behind locked doors, but on Zoom. So she was amazed and probably didn't quite expect that all those people who were in a Zoom room were suddenly in her room. And there was just support that she didn't realize she had gathered in the last few years on Zoom. So I walked in, and so did so many other, many, many incredibly capable women who were sincere and wishing to make this project happen. So it was like an English spring. It happened just like that. Well, I mean, the spring happens just like that. Yeah. It takes the whole year to get there, but the spring happens just like that. I came here, I said, okay, well, I'll come again next year. And then she said, well, by the way, you'll be packing to move the monastery.
We're going to do a little fun auction, and one of the purposes of this is to raise some funds, or really it's just to have some fun, so we call it a fundraiser, F-U-N, raiser.
So I'll show you what we're using for the office at the moment. So yeah, at the moment I'm using this room, which is the boot room, for a kind of office, but it's right next to the kitchen, so it's not really suitable because it's actually an entrance. Yeah, you haven't seen this yet. This is a huge double garage. So this is what I'm talking about, the potential of the place, you know. This is a huge area, obviously not insulated. You'd have to get enormous amounts of planning permission. But for the very long term, this whole space could be for the Lagos, and you could get showers and stuff.
Remember what this is for. One of the things it's for is to get an office.
Yeah. So this is the tennis court that was obviously not the reason we bought this place. But nevertheless, we use it for walking meditation. However, it could be a very suitable place to put the new office close to the house or even on the grass verge over there.
It doesn't really matter how much you bid. What's important is just you realise this is your opportunity to put this Anukampa monastery up to its next level. We got the land, it looks beautiful. Now we actually want to make sure it's comfortable. And honestly, the most important person in there has to be Ayachanda, and make sure she's looked after. And then you will benefit from that for years.
I mean, kutis are things that monks naturally get. I mean, the minute they become samaneras in Bodhinyana, they get a kuti. Whereas I haven't had a kuti for 8 years since I left Perth.
Right, yeah.
I mean, we've done this against the odds. I said to Ajahn Brahm recently, look, we did this. We actually did it. We did it from nothing. He said no. He's been educated now by me, in a sense, because he didn't realize it'd be this hard for bhikkhunis. But he said, no, you actually started from minus. And that's really true. We started from a deficit. We started without the support and respect. So it's a lot harder. Whatever I say and however I think it happened is a story and it's a sequence of events, but I think the real momentum behind this is the Buddha's own wish to see the fourfold assembly strong. And I believe the seeds for the Bhikkhuni Sangha and the Sangha in general, the fourfold assembly to be strong, were planted long ago by the Buddha himself. And in a sense, it has to happen. It's only us who can prevent it. We can block it, but if we don't block it, it will